A couple of weeks ago, an education colleague of mine called because she heard I might have a canoe she could borrow. Her folks were visiting from the lower 48, and they were hoping to get out on the water. In fact, I did have a canoe I was able to loan her, though crummy weather conspired to keep her and her folks from getting out like they had hoped to do. So, my canoe went unused, something that's happened to it with a fair deal of frequency in recent years. It's not that I don't like it. Actually, quite the opposite is true. I like it a great deal, which has kept me from parting with it, though it would likely be best to pass it along to someone who would use it. You see, I purchased it several years back, when it was just my wife and I in the summers. For two individuals, it was a mighty fine mode of transportation. Alas, it's never just the two of us anymore. No, I now have two teenage daughters to account for, which led to the procurement of other non-motorized boating options. As a result, the canoe now largely sits idle. More about that particular canoe in just a bit. Fact is, the weather of late has been tremendous for just about any type of boating you'd care to pursue, and a canoe is a great way to get out on our area's many waters. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Ever owned or spent any time in a canoe? They are a boat design that has been around for a very, very long time. I don't remember my exact age when I first got into a canoe, but it happened during summer camping opportunities during my time as a Cub Scout and Boy Scout. I won't say I was completely enamored with them, but I did recognize that they offered a level of utility that might someday play into the things that I like to do. I do remember my first extended experience with canoes. That would have been an extremely enjoyable 10-day outing in the Boundary Waters area of Minnesota and Canada during my college days. I took a summer class designed to knock down a social studies credit. The gist of the class was to study indigenous tribes of the northern hardwoods forests. The payoff was the 10-day canoe trip through the Boundary Waters area. We used rented aluminum canoes that seemed to me at the time to be absolute Cadillacs for what we were doing. Looking back, those canoes served us well, and we paddled a lot of miles. I would argue the terrain and scenery added strongly to the experience. That's an area of our continent that just screams for canoes, in my humble opinion. My first time to own a canoe came a few scant years later, while living along the shores of Six Mile Lake and teaching in Non-Dalton for Lake and Peninsula School District. I bought a Coleman canoe, the iconic green polyethylene type, from the Bush food shipping place I used, of all places. I used to paddle across to several streams on the other side of the lake. At the mouths of those lakes, I could usually wrangle a few pike for the frying pan. If I'm being honest, I probably underutilized that canoe. I'd like to think that whoever bought it, and I can no longer remember who that was, got a lot more use out of it than I did. My most recent canoe is the one I mentioned at the beginning. It's actually an inflatable canoe, a concession when I bought it to the limited amount of storage space we had at the time. It came highly rated on both Cabela's and Amazon. I'm a huge fan of reading what others have to say. Also, it came with free shipping from Amazon, which was and is always nice. And the price wasn't bad either. It's incredibly lightweight, something like 32 pounds, and every bit as stable on the water as a traditional rigid canoe. In short, I think it's a darn fine product, and it got regular use for a few summers, before our family situation changed. I will say this, every effort should be made to make sure that both chambers to the two pontoons have the same amount of air pressure. The first time my wife and I took it out, I aired up one chamber and then started on the other. I took a break to relieve myself, and she finished pumping up the second chamber. Both sides looked pretty much the same. Neither of us is anything like a canoeing expert, but we both have had experience with canoes and paddling. The first 30 minutes or so on the water were among the most trying I have ever experienced. We could not row in a straight line, instead bobbing and weaving and sometimes almost turning circles. She was ready to turn around and hit me with her paddle, and I was ready to do the same from behind with mine. We were very frustrated with each other. That's when we realized that one side was just a little bit softer than the other. A few minutes and a bit of pumping later, and our efficiency shot through the roof to our mutual relief. Again, canoes have been around for a very long time. The word canoe comes from a dead language, Island Carib, and means dugout. Canoes of various sorts dating back thousands of years have been found all over the world. Canoes of historical importance to indigenous peoples can be found in many parts, including the Scandinavian countries of Europe, the Caribbean islands, portions of South America, many parts of North America, and Australia. When many people think of historical traditional canoes, they likely think of the birch bark canoes crafted by many North American woodlands tribes. These were crafted by attaching birch bark over a frame of lightweight wood. Typical lengths were 14 feet or so and maybe 50 pounds. They were prized methods of transportation because they could haul heavy loads but were light enough to be portaged around more adventurous stretches of river. Portaging, by the way, is the term for carrying the canoe overland for such tricky spots. Canoes played a key role in the exploration of North America from east to west. One French missionary who explored the Great Lakes region in 1669 declared, "The convenience of these canoes is great in these waters, full of cataracts or waterfalls, and rapids through which it is impossible to take any boat. When you reach them, you load canoe and baggage upon your shoulders and go overland until the navigation is good, and then you put your canoe back into the water and embark again." In short, a good canoe was the bomb, and canoes were greatly admired and appreciated. For what it's worth, there are still craftsmen who build and sell birch bark canoes. Prices are not for the faint of heart, as these skilled specialists charge by the foot, and prices of $500 per foot are not uncommon. I would imagine for many a history buff, though, such a canoe is highly coveted. Current-day birch bark canoes aside, pretty much anything you're going to see on the water today will be made of man-made materials, even if the shape and design are largely unchanged. The common list of materials might include aluminum, fiberglass, Kevlar, polyethylene, wood, and a laminated material called Royalex. As with any product, each of these materials comes with a set of pros and cons. It's up to the person purchasing a canoe to determine what material type best meets with whatever their criteria happens to be. Basic examples might be that aluminum is sturdy but heavy, Kevlar light but costly, and polyethylene cost-effective, a kind way of saying cheap. Design and size are also something to consider, as canoes can come in a wide range of sizes, and there are some differences in design as well. For example, a flatter bottom can be more stable, but a rounded bottom is more responsive to maneuvering. Size can run from a bit over 10 feet to canoes that approach almost 20 feet. At the upper end, there are canoes designed to haul very heavy loads called freighter canoes, and some come with a squared-off stern for attaching smaller outboard engines. In fact, one company here in Alaska makes a 22-foot model that the owner touts can carry two guys, a heavy camp, and two bull moose, which pretty much puts it at the opposite end of the spectrum from my two-person inflatable canoe. It comes down to picking a canoe that's going to do what you need it to do for whatever application you have in mind. How do you choose the best canoe for you? Start with how you plan to use it and what you plan to haul in it. Are you looking for something to paddle on nice summer days with maybe another person and a picnic lunch? Or do you see yourself needing to haul a couple of moose back to camp? Calm days on the lake, or do you favor whitewater type rivers? And the all-important question, what's your budget like? For a lot of folks, that's often what it comes down to, how much they have in their wallets, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. If that describes you, someone who'd like to have a canoe but doesn't have the thousands of dollars it takes for a birch bark canoe or a specialty freighter canoe, take heart. Used ones can often be had for a lot less. Take the time to check out Craigslist. It's often fairly easy to find good used canoes for a couple of Benjamins. These are often the simple polyethylene model similar to what I owned years ago. Also, local opportunities sometimes come up, such as on the trading post or at garage sales. And if space is an issue, don't overlook inflatables and online sites like Amazon. That free shipping really is sweet. Canoes can be a magnificent way to get a bit more out of your summer. They are a time-honored way to travel on the water, and they're within reach, from a cost standpoint, for most people. If a canoe is in your future, or you already have one, don't forget to have that life jacket on at all times. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.